G20 is nearly here, as you can see in black and white up there. When I put this thing together in PowerPoint, it was in glorious technicolor, but unfortunately our program doesn't seem to like it very much, so stark black and white. So we are on the verge of a new year. We're on the verge of a new decade. And when it comes to this time of year, you can either look backwards or you can look forwards. In the car on the way here this morning, we were listening to sort of summary of the last 10 years, the last decade, and it just seemed to be a series of disasters and horrible events interspersed with one or two nice things. So I don't want to look backwards this morning, I want to look forwards. What will the next decade be like? Will it be as bumpy as the last one or not? Who knows? But when Paul asked if I would preach today, of course I said, yes, no, you can let go of my arm. No, it wasn't like that really. I'm a project person, so I'm no good at the daily routine, as Liz will tell you very forcibly. But when it comes to projects, that's the thing I do. So I thought, okay, this is a project, December 29th. Let's get out the project book and start planning. So December 29th. Where do we begin? Oh, yeah, December 29th, 2019. Okay, what's next? Yeah, I know. December 29th, 2019, AM. Okay, now really let's get started. Yeah, December 29th, 2019, AM, underlined. And that's how the page stayed for quite a long time, until three journeys filled the page with what I'm going to talk about this morning. And the first journey took me to a conference on business excellence, how to transform businesses from just being okay to being excellent. And there was a guy there that talked about how you manage to change people. Because in an organization, changing the equipment, the machinery is easy. Changing processes and procedures is easy. Changing people is a different thing altogether. And he gave us two very useful sort of mathematic equations about changing people. And I thought, what better way to prepare for the new year than doing a bit of mathematics? What do you think? Let's have a look. Here they are. Look, T equals F equals A. And E plus R equals O. What on earth could they mean? T equals F equals A. Could that be tomorrow equals future equals awesome? Possibly. E plus R equals O. England plus rugby equals, oh dear. Or for the cricket fans, England plus Rabada equals a duck. If you want to know about that, you'll have to look at BBC Sport. No, what they actually mean is this. Think equals feel equals act. And event plus response equals outcome. He was an eminent psychologist who had done a lot of study about how people react, how people behave. And very obviously, the bottom one says, look, if there's an event, the way we respond to it will dictate what the outcome is. Okay? So something happens to us. If we respond positively, there's likely to be a positive outcome. If we meet somebody, that's an event, and we are well disposed to them, we'll respond nicely to them and the outcome will be a blossoming friendship. It could go the other way, just depends. But how we respond is dictated by how we think and how we feel about the situation. We are blessed as human beings. God's given us a combination of four things that no other being has, animal, vegetable, or mineral. I really don't feel miserable this morning. We have a heart, which it is, that's our emotion, how we feel about things. We have a soul, which is our spiritual link to heaven. We have a body, which is the strength we have to act, to do things. And we have a mind, which it gives us the ability to think rationally, to think things out. So we have those four things about us. And what we need to understand is, if we want people to change, whether it's us or somebody else, we have to go back to the thought process that's going on in their mind. And that will dictate how they feel emotionally about something, and that will dictate how they act. And so their response will be whatever it is. And I'm sitting listening to this guy who explained it much better than I did just now, and thinking, actually, Jesus said that 2,000 years ago. That was exactly the message that he gave. If you're going to have a good outcome in life, for you, for other people, you have to respond correctly to whatever you're faced with. And to do that, you've got to have the right emotional feeling about it, which means you've got to have the right thoughts going on in your head to start with. So I thought, that's an idea for the talk. Let's look at the project book and put it down. Okay, so two equations that form the beginning of the talk. The second journey took me to took me to Palestine, or the West Bank, as we now call it, since Israel took it over. And this was to give a talk to some consultants. And to get there, I had to travel the road from Jericho to Jerusalem. And if we can have a look at the next slide. I gave you the wrong cue. There is, in fact, a new superhighway from Jericho to Jerusalem, which you can see on the right-hand side. And the old road, the old track, is still there. See on the left-hand side. It's sort of down in the valley. And you can see in the middle of that picture on the right, there's a road going off. And there's a sign there that says, Good Samaritan. This way to the Good Samaritan. And I looked at it and I thought, yeah, okay. I think that was a story. It wasn't a real thing. So how do you know that's what it is? Well, okay. It's tourism, isn't it? Let's make a bit of money. So we'll put a sign up saying Good Samaritan. But I thought, actually, Good Samaritan, that's all about those equations. That's all about thinking the right thoughts, about having the right emotions. So let's get that in the project book as well, the Good Samaritan. So did that. Third journey took me here on December, whatever it was, when Paul preached from John. And this verse just stood out. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And I'm thinking, that is the key, because what I've been looking at is all about the making of love, about having the right thoughts, about having the right emotions. And here it is in this passage, but what does that mean? What, it's all very well saying, love your neighbour as yourself, or love one another. What does that mean in practice? How do you do that sort of thing? And of course, the story of the Good Samaritan tells you exactly what you have to do to put love into practice. So that's what it's all about. And if we look at, and I'll get the right cue for you this time. If we look at the story of the Good Samaritan, there are six people in the story. Yeah. We've got the legal expert there at the top on the right, and we've got Jesus to whom he asks his question. And in the story, we've got the priest on the left, we've got the Levite on the right, and we've got the Samaritan and the injured Jewish man traveller left for dead on the road. And each of those people exhibit a different form of those equations that we looked at. The legal expert has the thoughts running through his mind, oh, I know all about the law, I've studied it all my life, and here is this country hick upstart preacher who's telling us that it's not that what we believe isn't quite what it should be. I'll test him out. So his feeling is, I'm gonna get you. So he asked Jesus the question, you know, what do I have to do to achieve eternal life? Jesus is thinking in his mind compassionately about this man. He's thinking, what a shame this man's been brought up in this tradition that's just captured him in that train of thought. But let's let him find out the truth for himself. So he turns the question back on the legal expert. Okay, what have you read? What does it say you should do? What's written in the law? How do you read it? And the man answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. Yeah, the four things that we have that no other being has. And love your neighbor as yourself. Yes, you've got it right, says Jesus. Do this and you will live. But the guy can't get this thought out of his mind. He's got to test this person to get the better of them. So, well, who's my neighbor then? And then Jesus tells the story. He doesn't say, well, surely you've read that in the law already, you should know that. No, he tells a story to gently guide this man to where the truth is. The poor Jewish traveller who gets beaten and stripped and robbed. And I wondered why he was stripped. But apparently it seems that clothing was a very valuable item in those days. And he was probably stripped in order to take his clothes and sell them or whatever. But what was his thinking was probably, I don't think I'm going to survive. And he wasn't feeling too good. But the priest who came along, busy man, probably could have been on his way to perform ritual, who may have come just from it. But the point is, his thinking is, I can't go anywhere near a dead body or an injured body because that makes me unclean, and that means I can't do anything for the next week while I purify myself, which means I can't perform my duties, which means I'm not going to get my wages that people give me. I'll pass by on the other side. I can't even let my shadow cross that body because the law says that even that makes me unclean. So I go to the other side of the road. The Levite, brought up in the same tradition, does exactly the same thing. Same thought process going through his mind. And then along comes a Samaritan. Samaritans are hated by the Jews. They're despised by the Jews because they've intermarried. A good Jew would think, oh, this is a dirty person who really has made a big mistake in their life. Samaritan comes along and his thought process is, here's somebody who needs help. Here's somebody that I need to stop and give some sort of help to somehow. And his feeling is one of compassion for that half-dead person lying on the road. So what does he do? He stops, he takes out the oil and the wine that he's got in his pack, he treats the man's wounds, he puts him on his donkey and takes him to the inn and says to the innkeeper, look after this man, and here's 2 days' wages to look after him. And what's more, when I come back in 2 days, if you need any more, you can have it. Just make sure this guy's okay. And that's the story. And that was the lesson that Jesus wanted to give to this young legal expert. Unfortunately, it doesn't look as though it quite struck home, because when Jesus said to him, so of those three people who passed by, the dying Jewish traveller, which do you consider was his neighbour? And the legal expert can't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan, because they're so hated. He just had to say, that fellow, that one. You're one who stopped and helped him. Yeah? So it takes more than just that to get through some people's thought processes and their feeling. But what about the Jewish traveller? What do you think he ended up thinking and feeling after he had been helped by a Samaritan? Could it have changed his thought process about Jewish people altogether? Could it have changed his emotion or his feelings towards the Jewish people? Could that have been the positive outcome that came from this situation? We don't know, but we could hope, at least, that's what it was. So three journeys got to the point where, you know, we've solved these equations. But so what? If we are going to be serious about putting love into practice, we got to take some lessons from what the Samaritan did. And I'm deeply indebted to somebody called Michael. I have no idea who Michael is, but when I wanted to sort of research a bit more about the Good Samaritan and the thinking behind it, I did what all good people do. I went on the internet, and I found a blog from this guy, Michael, who laid out five lessons that we learn from the Good Samaritan. Number one, time, giving time. The Good Samaritan, wherever he was going on that day, never made it. He gave his time to this wounded Jewish traveller instead. He gave up his time. A priest and the Levite, busy people with all these things going on in their head, too busy. They didn't give any time at all. He gave his money. Okay, he used his precious wine and oil to tend the man's wounds. And he gave money to the innkeeper to look after the man. He gave up his safety. He didn't think of the risks that could be facing him if he stopped to help this person. Could it be a decoy? And the bandits were waiting around the corner to grab him as soon as he stopped. He didn't think of his own safety. He gave that up and gave time and money and his safety to this person. He set aside his prejudice. Yeah? Because as the Jews hated the Samaritans in turn didn't think much of the Jews, those holier-than-thou people who despise us. He set it aside. And that's the message which would have blown the minds of the people who were listening to Jesus on that day. The fact that a Samaritan had stopped to help a Jew would have been total anathema to them. And that's how Jesus often makes his point, is by giving that startling contrast. And you know, as we read, the legal expert at the end couldn't even bring himself to say the Samaritan was a good neighbour. It was just that bloke. And lastly, Samaritan surrendered control. He surrendered control. A Samaritan tending a Jew, if another Jew had come along the road, what could have happened? He took the Jew to a Jewish inn as a Samaritan. He could have been beaten, he could have been killed quite easily for who he was. But he surrendered control to do what needed to be done. And there you go, five things that we can have a look at if we want to put love in action during the coming year, during the coming decade. Giving our time, giving our money, forgetting our feeling of safety and comfort, giving up our prejudices in the way that we've been brought up, in the way we've been taught, in the way that our surroundings have directed our thinking. And giving up control of our lives and handing it over to somebody else. Yeah. So, yeah. Next slide, please. New Year's resolution. Hands up those of you who make New Year's resolutions. Oh, wonderful. That means I can't ask you the next question, which is keep your hand up if they last more than a week. That's excellent. I'd like to persuade you to make some resolutions for next year, please. Just think about those four words that God gave in his original commandments to people. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind. And let's think about those going into the new year. Let us let go of all our prejudices and our bad thought processes and be directed by the Holy Spirit. That's what our soul is there for. Our soul is our link to heaven, which can direct the thought processes in our head. And let's let our thought process then direct our emotions to the people we meet, to the events that befall us. And let's act on the basis of good thinking and good feeling of compassion for people. And so, for the new year, resolution. Think like Jesus in 2020. Be emotional like Jesus in 2020. And act like Jesus in 2020. That's the lesson I've learned.
Nick, I just wondered if I could share a testimony.
Please do.
From the beginning, yeah. As you've talked, it's even more that I need to share it. So,
have we got a microphone that I can use? Is it on? No?
Hello. Oh, it's on. This was a testimony that happened 20 odd years ago, believe it or not. And I was reminded of this a couple of weeks ago when Paul was preaching on I can't remember who it was, but someone who had massive faith and wouldn't allow Jesus into his home to heal his daughter. He just said, I know that if you can do it from here and it will all be sorted out. And the message was really that there's certain kinds of faith that causes an immediate response from the Lord. Anyway, as I say, it was about 20 years ago, and I was going on a journey, one of the first holidays that I'd been able to take my children on because I was a single parent, and we were going to Lowestoft. And because money was tight, I decided that I wasn't going to pay the £9 insurance that should my car break down, we wouldn't spoil our holiday. And I thought, you know what, God's going to get me there. I don't need to spend that £9 that I don't have. So I didn't. Needless to say, as we were in Essex somewhere on the hottest day of the year, my car broke down. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't believe this. We managed to pull the car over so it wasn't interfering with the traffic. And I thought, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? But thought, you know what? I've got friends that belong to the RAC. I'm sure that if I ring them, we'll be able to sort something out. Went over to the phone box, and because it was the hottest day of the year, everybody was out and I couldn't get hold of anybody. My children, particularly my son, who was 13 at the time, was, oh, Mum, why did you not pay for the insurance? Da-da-da-da. You can imagine what was going on in my ears. Anyway, I said, what we've got to do right now is just pray. So come on, God will sort this out. We absolutely need to pray. So I started praying, prayed that the Lord would sort the journey out. Anyway, I then was alerted to these two women that were walking down the street with a baby. Obviously, I didn't know who they were, but something told me to approach them. So I went up to them, and this particular lady, I said, look, this is my plight. I was obviously a bit emotional, as you can imagine. And she said, don't worry, we're going to help you. It's going to be fine. I know someone that's a mechanic, and it's all going to be fine. So she then walked me round to this person's house, and unfortunately this person was off sick, did work for the RAC, but if he'd been caught doing anything on my car, then he could have got sacked from his job. So where my light went on, you can imagine the light dimmed a bit. She said, come over to my house, let's have a sandwich, your children need a drink. She was so wonderful. And I thought, right, fine. Just as we approached her house, there was an AA man working opposite. And I thought, wow, this is it. This is my answer. And he said, yeah, I'll come over, have a look at your car, don't worry. And I thought, thank you, Lord. Anyway, he came over, looked at my car, and he said, I know exactly what your problem is. Your timing belt's gone. It's going to have to go into the garage, and it'll cost about £400 to fix it. Well, you can imagine, I was absolutely distraught. So we went back to this lady's house, and it was, okay, she said that she'd organise moving my car, so it wasn't on this A road, that it was likely to be towed away. And I'll go on my journey, find out how much it cost to get on the train, rang the train station, it was just going to be an extortionate amount of money, and again, just couldn't believe it. So then from there, this amazing person, who wasn't a Christian because I asked her, said, it's very clear that you need your holiday, walked up to her bedroom, took a few hundred quid out of a tin, and said to me, you need this holiday, go on your way on this holiday. Obviously, I shared about the Lord, and you would think that was the end of it. Her husband then drove us. We went on our holiday. We were going for 2 weeks because it was a buy one, get one free if you were a single parent. So we were going for 2 weeks. Anyway, the Thursday before we were due to come back, a telephone call comes to me from this person through the Pontins, and I rang her and she said, just to let you know that your car's all been fixed, please can you come and join us for a meal as you go on your journey home. So I just felt like I needed to share that with you.
Thanks for that. That's a whole lot of Good Samaritans all in one go there. Well, thanks for sharing that. That gives you faith in human nature, that those sort of things happen. Anyway, yeah, your possible New Year's resolutions for next year. Just think, feel, and act like Jesus for the coming decade. Right, back to you.